I get to sit down. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Cora Louise Belford, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Cora Louise.
I love you, too. And I'm glad to have the opportunity to be here with you this afternoon. When Mark got ready to read the preamble, he said he thought he'd better read it rather than try to do it by heart. Somebody told me years ago, never try to do anything by heart if you know it too well. My husband, who was an Episcopal clergyman, was asked to say the Lord's Prayer at the big dinner one year, and he started out and he left out a whole section. He stopped. He said, maybe you should have asked someone who's more accustomed to praying. Anyhow, if you know it too well, have it in writing before you. Now, we're going to talk about the 12 traditions this afternoon. We talk a lot about the 12 steps, and I think this is what we're supposed to do. We don't talk a lot about the 12 traditions, and I think that's what we're supposed to do. And I hope in the course of these remarks, you'll find out why I say that, because I didn't always feel that way. When I went to my first meeting, like any of you, I was interested in only one thing, sobriety. AA's first legacy, recovery. Now, I never heard of the legacies. I didn't know what they were. All I knew was that this was a place where people went to get straight if they had a drinking problem. So all I was interested in, I even hoped to find out anything about, was recovery. Now, recovery did not happen at that first meeting. Recovery takes a while. What happened at that first meeting were the benefits of unity, the second tradition, and service, the second legacy, and service, the third legacy. That's what was at work in that room that night. The benefits of AA unity and service. Now, as Lee and I left that meeting that first night, we picked up all the literature, and we bought all the books, and we went home, and we started to read. And I opened the big book, and I pored over it. And there's nothing compulsive about me, of course. I read it straight through the first night, and then thought I had been sober 10 years and knew everything there was to know. Now, my husband was reading the 12 and 12. He was familiar with the ideas contained in the 12 steps. None of these ideas are really original with AA. They represent a kind of distillation and adaptation from the philosophies of many different groups of people from many different times, principally from the old Oxford groups in which AA had its beginning. Now, the thing that is unique for us, completely unlike anything that any other fellowship or society or institution or club or anything else that I've ever heard of, it's completely unique for AA. These are our AA traditions. Now, as my husband read along through the book, he would interrupt me every now and then and say, you've got to stop and listen to this. Well, I didn't want to be interrupted, but after all, you know, I was trying to learn to be sober and I wanted to be patient with him. This was, after all, I had been sober 20 minutes or so at this point. So I wanted to be patient with him, and so I decided I would listen to what he had to say. And he thought it was absolutely remarkable. The whole thing about the traditions completely blew his mind. He said, think of this. I've never heard anything like it. Here is an outfit that not only declines outside contributions, they even put a limit on the amount of money their own members can give. Don't you think that's remarkable? And I said, well, I guess so. If it helps him, that's fine. And I went right on back to reading my book. And he went on right on back to reading his book. And before long, he interrupted me again, and I found it harder to be patient this time. And I said, what is it? Please tell me what it is you want to say. Well, he had read again what the sixth tradition has to say, that AA should never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. He read that to me, and it was just so much gobbledygook, I had no idea what it meant. And I said, well, what does it mean? He said, well, it means that these people learned early on that they could not try to do everything. Suppose they had tried to establish hospitals, set up rehabilitation centers, or develop education programs. Then they might not have had time to do the one thing that they really know how to do. And I said, well, what's that? He said, that's help people get sober. And I said, that's what I'm trying to find out about it. You could just leave me alone long enough to let me read the book. So we went on a little bit longer, and I read a little bit more, and he got to the 10th tradition, and he said, well, now this really beats all. I mean, the kind of foresight and prudence and wisdom that went into this kind of planning is really uncanny. And I said, what have you got this time? He said, they knew enough not to get involved in outside issues. I said, well, that's good. What do you mean? He said, well, suppose that they had gotten involved in all the kinds of controversies that have been going on ever since their foundation. What would have happened to them? It could have destroyed them, because people hold widely divergent views on all these sort of things. So they stuck to one thing, the one thing that they really knew about. I said, are you going to tell me that was sobriety? He said, why, yes. And I said, well, let me see what more I can find out about that, if you don't mind. So I would go on and read. When he got to anonymity, he said, what do you think it means? And I said, well, I hadn't really given it any thought. And the only thing that I care about is that I just don't want anybody to know that I come to these meetings, and I don't want them to tell anybody that. He said, well, they think it means a whole lot more than that. I said, I'm trying to find out what it means to get sober. Do you think I could be let alone long enough to read the book? Well, finally, he consented to let me go along and read the book. I went on for 2 years, maybe longer, still just trying to find my way in the recovery program, trying to find what it is you do a day at a time to stay away from a drink and to try to learn to practice these principles in all my affairs. And as I say, I had been in AA quite a little while before I came to realize that if it had not been for the legacies of unity and service, I would not have had a recovery story to tell. Now, let me try to explain to you what I mean by that. What was really happening in that room that night? Here were all the people. They had come together, gathered together in unity for one purpose, to talk about the recovery program of AA, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, to fulfill AA's primary purpose. That night, I was the beneficiary of it. That's all they were trying to do that night. Now, suppose we had been arguing about anonymity, about fundraising, about whose recovery facility was better than who else's. Suppose we had been involved in all these things, there might not have been any conversation going on about recovery. That's what I had come to find out about. That's the only thing I was interested in. And that's the thing that I wanted to get, and that's the thing that we do get. And the reason, I think, that we don't have to talk about these traditions and that we don't have to talk about AA services is that most people, most of the time, in most places, abide by these traditions. They embrace them. And therefore, we are set free to do the thing that we come together to do in the first place, which is to discuss the AA program of recovery, the 12 suggested steps. The 12 suggested steps grew out of the experiences of the early groups and members in AA, of the early members of AA. The 12 traditions grew out of the experiences of the early groups. And they all represent antidotes, answers to the problems that were life-threatening to the early groups in AA, to the things that might have prevented AA from lasting for 55 years and growing and developing the way it has. And they are our insurance for the future, that AA will still be here strong and unchanged for the alcoholics who are still to come. Now, I want to tell you about a situation that came to my attention when I was working in the AA General Service Office. And by the way, outside of getting sober in AA itself, the greatest thing that ever has happened to me was the opportunity that I had to work in our service office for 15 years in New York. It was just, I can't tell you what a learning experience it was for me. I can't tell you what it did for my own AA program in terms of teaching me the value of the group conscience, the value of AA everywhere, not just my own group. New Yorkers are inclined to be very provincial. They look at the map, and everything is a place you fly over to get to Florida or to the West Coast. That's all they know, is Florida or the West Coast. And New York AA was a little like that. People knew a little bit about West Coast AA and a little bit about Florida AA because they went there on visits and so on. And I didn't know a thing, except I had been sober 8 years when I went to work in the General Service Office. And I knew some of the members, some of the girls who worked in the office. But I really still had no idea what went on in that place. I had no idea of the reach of this thing, and I can't tell you what it did for me. Pride is not a word that we use in AA because it's a dangerous word for alcoholics. But it's the only word that I can think of to describe how I felt about this place. Here were a group of people who at one time couldn't take care of their own simplest affairs. Some of them couldn't even sign their own names. At least if you signed it the way I did, you'd wonder the bank ever accepted the check. But I never knew why they did it, but they did. Here were these people who could get together and put together something like this. Put together a collection of literature like we have. Put together a service structure like we have. Traditions, things that keep us going. It just blew my mind. Anyhow, I was going to tell you about this, about an experience that I had when I was working there. This was in 1967 or 68. Now, this was a long time ago, so my facts may not be absolutely accurate, but the idea is correct, and what I'm going to tell you is all true. I had the overseas assignment that year, and this is a country where all the things that we talk about in the 12 traditions were ignored. They didn't think they needed them. I didn't know this at the time. But at any rate, I was corresponding. I corresponded with AA groups and members overseas and with general service boards overseas and with publishing companies overseas. So this publishing company from a small European country sent us a manuscript, their translation of the big book, and they wanted permission from the directors of AA World Services, who held the copyright, to translate this book and publish it in their own country. Now, whenever we received a translation of a book, of one of our pieces of literature, we found someone in New York in the program, and this was usually not hard to do, who spoke that language well, usually a native of that country, and who had a solid AA program as well. It happened that one of the directors of AA World Services was a native of this particular country. So he said, I'll take the book home and read it. And he came back at the next AAWS meeting, and he said, I don't know what to say about this book. He said, there are a lot of serious changes that they've made. For instance, there is absolutely no reference to God or the higher power anywhere in the book. Not even in the 12 steps. And he said, there's something about the stories that worries me. They don't really have an exactly true ring. Well, it happened that we knew a group of AAs in New York who were going to Europe, who were planning to visit that country. We asked them if they could stay over a couple of extra days in this country, get to know, meet with the members of the publishing company, try to attend an AA meeting, try to find out what the membership felt about this book. We were only hearing from the publishing company. So these people went and they did just what we asked them to do. And they came back and they were in an absolute state of shock too. Everybody was charming. They were delightful. They showed them around. They answered all their questions. They did everything in the world they possibly could to be nice. They asked him about the changes that had been made in the big book. Oh, he said, well, it's all right for you Americans who you are so pious and for have all these references to God and higher power, but we don't go for that kind of thing here, so it just wouldn't go with our membership. And they said, well, what about these stories? Oh, he said, we intend for our book to have wide public sales. We're going to put them in bookstalls. So we hired a professional writer to give us some Hollywood-type stories with real glitz and glitter. In other words, all these stories were made up. Not one of them was real. Well, they said, well, thank you so much. We'll go back and report. They published a magazine over here. And our friend said, well, what about your magazine? Who receives a magazine? Well, it's not really intended for members of AA. It contains no AA sharing at all. They said, not intended for members of AA? Well, who would an AA magazine be intended for? Well, this is intended for important people. People in the government and people in industry and people... you know, in the medical professions, people who have influence. Oh, so thank you very much. Well, could we attend a meeting? Certainly. There happens to be one today. Oh, and there was one other thing. We don't have any problem, they said, about people knowing about AA here. One of our members owns a television station, and somebody appears on it every week. And they said, but anonymously, of course, oh, no, no, we don't want people to think we're ashamed. So we are full face, and we give our full names, and so everybody here knows we're not in the least ashamed. Well, it happened there was a meeting that day in a treatment facility that was owned by the chairman of their board of trustees, who was a non-alcoholic doctor and a good friend of Bill's. And we knew him. And he later came to New York that same year, and we had a long visit with him. And he's perfectly charming. And he understood our 12 traditions perfectly. He really did. But he said, you don't understand. Over there, we have a lot of rugged individualists. Rugged individualists. Have any of you ever known any rugged individualists? I thought we had a few over here. Anyhow, they went to the meeting at the treatment facility. Here were the AAs in one side of the room, arguing about the money. A large industry, 10 years previously, had given them what amounted to $10,000. Now, in 1957, $10,000 was a lot of money. This was 1968. They were still arguing about how to spend this money. And it had gotten to be quite a sum by this point because it had been invested and it was accumulating money. So somebody had a brilliant new idea. Well, don't spend it. We have to save it to publish the book. Well, they argued about that. They also argued about who was going to appear on the television that week. Now, the drunks, the alcoholics who were in here trying to sober up, were sitting over in one corner shivering and shaking while the alcoholics spent their time arguing about the things that the 12 traditions free us from discussing even. We don't even have to talk about these things except occasionally at a business meeting. No message was being carried in that room that night, that afternoon. Well, these people came back and told us this long, sad tale. And we were really amazed. So we did a little research, and we got the world directories for the past 10 years to see how much growth there had been in that country. And we found out there had been absolutely none. They had the same size membership in 1968 that they had had in 1958. They just didn't grow. Why would it? No drunks, no new people were hearing anything. I mean, that handful of people that were running everything were really running everything, or else it wasn't being done at all. Now, I'm happy to tell you that it was not long after that that country got its act together. They cleaned up their book. They got it straight. It's now been published in their own language. And they are members of the AA World Service Meeting, which meets every 2 years. And everything's fine there. I point this out just to show you what can happen when these traditions are ignored or abused. You know, you can't chip away at this any more than you can chip away at a skeleton and expect it to be able to stand. You can't chip away at a structure. If you weaken it in one place, then eventually it's going to fall. Now, the AA symbol is a circle signifying unity, wholeness, oneness. And within this circle is a triangle, recovery, unity, service. A triangle cannot stand on one leg or even two. It has to have all three. And that's why it's important that most AAs, most places, most of the time, continue to abide by these traditions, to honor them, and to embrace them. Not to talk about them, not to argue about them, but just to look after them, to be attentive, to care, to pay attention. That's what's important. We don't even want to give the impression, for instance, of being allied with some outside agency. We don't even want to give the impression that we are raising money from the outside or accepting money from the outside. Because the things that are unique about us are the things that make this program work. The traditions are why the program works. Without it, it wouldn't make any difference how fine our recovery program was. If we don't have a place to go where that's what people are talking about, it doesn't make any difference what's written down. We have to have people who are alive and care and alert and not argumentative, but just sure-footed about what they're going to do about these things. Now, if you like, I thought we might run through the 12 traditions and discuss each of them briefly. And I hope you'll feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, make suggestions, say whatever's on your mind. Okay? Any questions so far? Any comments? Anybody have anything they want to discuss? Yeah. I think it's extremely important that we know what they mean. I really do. It worried me a whole lot, especially after I went to work in the office and we had to spend so much time dealing with matters that had to do with the traditions. It worried me a lot that no AA group ever wanted to discuss it. I remember one time I was asked to lead a meeting on the 12 traditions in my own group. And what we did there, we went through the 12 steps, and then the 13th meeting was, they were starting it, the 13th meeting was going to be on the traditions, and they asked me to do the first one. Well, we had two meetings. One was a discussion meeting, and that was upstairs. The step meeting was downstairs. Well, the room began to fill up with people, and I saw them whispering to each other and so on, and little by little they all peeled off and left the room. 10 or 12 people were left there out of a group of, say, 75. And they had heard it was going to be a meeting on the traditions, and they think it's boring. Now, nobody wants to hear about the traditions, nobody wants to hear about the service until they've heard about it. When they've heard about it, they're interested. But you can't, it's hard to get them to listen the first time. And it used to worry me a lot that we couldn't do it. I think it's important, and I think maybe it needs to be done in sponsorship if it's not going to be done in the groups. It is important, though. Now, there are diverging opinions about a lot of the traditions. We'll talk about that as we go along, that some people are more anonymous than others, and this is okay, provided we abide by the anonymity tradition, which is different from anonymity. We'll get to that. Okay? Tradition one. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery. My recovery. Your recovery. Your recovery. Depends on AA unity. I think we've talked about that. That without this unity, there's no recovery. There was not in this country that I told you about. Because there was no unity. And first things were not first. And the primary purpose was not being fulfilled. So unity has to come before recovery. It has to exist. It's a precondition of recovery, really. Stop me now whenever you have something you want to ask or say or comment. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. See this country I was telling you about? The leaders governed. They're the ones that made the decisions about the money. They're the ones who made the decisions about the book, about the magazine, about television shows, about the meetings, about everything. Yes?
I might ask a question. When I changed my, or I got something to a different group, this group had something they called a steering committee.
Yeah.
Is that, have you heard of that before?
Yes, most groups have.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if that was just original.
No. The question was that he moved to a new group, and the new group had a steering committee, and he wanted to know if this was customary. I don't know how customary it was, but the group I belonged to had one. Now, it was made up of past chairmen and past secretaries of the group. Our officers held office for 6 months. And what they did, they constituted a nominating committee, is really what it amounted to. And they nominated people to fill the offices.
This is the end of side one. Please turn your cassette at this time and continue playing. Thank you. Side two will continue in just a moment.
Still could be nominations from the floor. This was an enormous group. It had 400 members. So, I mean, you can see that we had to have something of that kind. Yes?
Does that
No, that was decided at a business meeting, group conscience meeting. Yes, Cam. Wait a minute. For the tape, we need to repeat the question. She wanted to know if the steering committee made decisions about how the money was to be spent. And I said, in my group, they did not. How the money was to be spent was decided at a business meeting, a group conscience meeting. She was disturbed by the fact that the group conscience meeting, the business meeting, did not begin with a prayer or meditation of any kind. And she was disturbed by the amount of controversy that took place at the business meeting. An old friend of mine in New York used to say that a business meeting in his group was like the full moon over Rockland State. Rockland State being the state insane asylum. See, if this can take place in a business meeting where you're not carrying a message, you're there to talk about something else, you don't have to have this happen at a meeting where you have new people who have come to hear the message carried. Now, I think your idea about opening the meeting with a moment of silence and a prayer is fine, and I would, if you like that, why don't you suggest it? Now, I've never been to a business meeting which was preceded by a prayer, because usually they follow a meeting which has begun with one and ended with one. So, but, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, they should make the decision what they want to do. You suggest it. Yes. Hi, Rick. He says this club, one of the oldest clubs in his community, has a dress code, and that you can't get into a meeting if you don't meet this dress code. First, I would like to say that a club is not AA as such. AA groups meet in a club. Now, members of the group, of the different groups that meet there, are probably on the steering committee and agree to this. And if this is the group conscience, if this is what they decide, it may not be right forever, but maybe it's right for the time being. I don't know. I mean, I might have a personal opinion about this, but groups make their own decisions. Now, a club is not a group, because a club has dues and fees. And a group does not. A club owns property, and a group does not. Yeah. Yes. He wants to know if a group can break tradition as long as it doesn't affect AA as a whole. Anybody can do anything. any group can do anything. This doesn't mean it's a good thing. And this doesn't mean it's good for the group even.
The best thing you can do to aid a situation, maybe get the PI committee to write him a letter of suggestion?
You might get the delegate or the district committee member or somebody to come and talk. Provided they can do it in a reasonable way and not come to shake the thing and fuss at everybody. That doesn't work. But group autonomy is complete. Now, we used to get a whole lot more upset about that than Bill did in the office. He used to die laughing about these things. Because he'd been around the block a few more times than we had. And he'd been around the block before they had these traditions. And he'd been around the block when the things were happening that made him write these traditions. So he knew. And it was always his feeling that if the thing was really far out, it wouldn't last. It would collapse. Now, sometimes things have been a long time dying. But, you know, when they... I won't say when they first started having AA in Japan, but when it hadn't been going on in Japan for very long. And, of course, it was carried to Japan by servicemen and by merchant seamen and so on. They used to have sobriety parades. And they would walk up and down the street carrying banners. Now, this upset us a great deal. Bill just died laughing. He said, would you like to make book? They won't be doing this 5 years from now. They won't. Let's go on to the next. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. This was a matter of the very deepest controversy when I was working in the General Service Office, and I've been retired 10 years. I worked there for 15. The whole time I was there, this was a matter of the very deepest controversy. And I read the conference reports as they come out now. It's still a matter of deep controversy. Bill has plenty to say about that here in this book. This is AA Comes of Age. If any of you haven't read it, read it. I'm not saying sit down and read it from cover to cover in one night like I did the big book. You won't get to be an expert any more than I did. It is my opinion, and my opinion only, that the discussion of the traditions in AA Comes of Age is better than the discussion of the traditions in the 12 and 12. It's deeper, and it gives you more background on all of them. And Bill talks in here about, let me see, I have a note someplace about what page that's on, too. Well, I don't have it right here. 103, maybe. I got it. Amazing. Let me read you. Now, this book was published in 1957, but Bill was talking historically. Tradition 3, for a long time, was a puzzler. The only requirement for AA membership is a sincere desire to stop drinking. They dropped the word sincere. We worried a lot about membership. In fact, when heavy publicity first came our way, we were scared witless. We said to ourselves, won't all kinds of odd people show up? Complications, you know. Alcohol mixed with other things. In those days, we were always talking about that mythical character called the pure alcoholic. No complications, you understand, just the guzzler. We actually thought we were like that ourselves. Hence, when members began pouring in, our worries mounted. Won't there be mighty queer people? Won't there be criminals? Won't there be social undesirables, we asked. Mixed with a certain amount of snobbishness and smugness, this was downright fear. We simply did not know what to do or who would turn up. Since that early time, literally all kinds of people have found their way into Alcoholics Anonymous, and many more now than in 1957. Our inclusiveness is now very broad indeed. For example, Not too long ago, I sat in my office with a member who bears the title of Countess. That same night, I went to an AA meeting. It was a winter night. And there was a mild-looking little gent taking the coats. He was not charging anything, either. He was just doing it to be obliging. And I said, "Who's that little guy?" And somebody answered, "Oh, he's been around for a long time. Everybody likes him. He used to be a member of Al Capone's gang." Now, that's how universal AA is today. Of course, what we had the big controversy about today is alcohol and drugs. I suppose it goes on here, it goes on every place else. Now, we got pamphlets on that. We got a whole pamphlet called Problems Other Than Alcohol that Bill wrote. And when I had the assignment, I excerpted from it, and we did a little brief pamphlet just covering exactly what you have to do to be a member of AA and what is not acceptable. The idea was that anybody is welcome at AA meetings, anybody at all. That AA membership is for alcoholics only. Now, alcoholics who are blue-eyed, black-eyed, green-eyed, brown-eyed, yellow hair, broken legs, straight legs, crooked, anything else, alcoholics who have any other kind of problem. Any other kind of problem is perfectly all right, as long as they have alcohol for a problem. But people who have only drugs for a problem are welcome at open meetings, but they're not considered members of AA because they do not have an alcohol problem. Now, this doesn't seem all that complicated to me, but it gets pretty complicated. And people, well, they scream and holler about the dual addiction, but so what? If it's dual, if they're addicted to alcohol, then you can be addicted to anything else and be a member. It doesn't really matter. But this is argued all the time. Now let me give you some examples of... Oh, right, in 1972, when the Hughes bill was passed, this was the bill that created government funding for state programs. And all of a sudden, treatment facilities were springing up all over this country for alcoholics and drug addicts. And they threw them all in together at these places. And when they got out of there, they were sending all of them to AA. And our telephone was ringing off the wall. We were going absolutely crazy. I finally had to do a letter, which was mailed to the whole membership list of the North American Association of Alcohol Programs, explaining what AA's position was. This is when you can get a big problem. Most state mental institutions are out in the country. They're not right up in the middle of a big city. They're out a distance. I remember this happened in Pennsylvania. Eagleville, Pennsylvania is where the state mental institution was, which was way out in the country, near a very small town that had one AA group with something like 12 members. So, because they wanted these people to have an AA program, they began to send them by the truckloads to the AA meeting, 25 and 30, showing up at this little group of 12 people. And not all 12 would be there every time. And it was not an AA meeting anymore. It was a madhouse is what it was, of course. Because nobody knew anything. But, there was no way that this could work. Well, they got hysterical about it. We were far enough away so we didn't have to get hysterical, so we just suggested that they talk to the people at the hospital, explain the situation, and ask if they could send no more than 10 each time. And that when they sent, that the 10 they sent should be alcoholics. Because that was the only thing the group was equipped to talk about. This is the kind of thing that can happen when the nature of the meeting can be changed by having people with problems other than alcohol. Then it affects AA, and it can affect AA as a whole when this happens. Now, I know people must have things to say on this subject. Yes. You know, one of the great things in AA is that we have never tried to make close definitions of the words we use. We try to keep them open-ended so that people can make their own definitions. I mean, there is not one way to do the 12 steps. There is not one way to run an AA group. I mean, these things are kept loose on. We would never have gotten sober if they were rigid, if there had been rigidities about all of these things. The reason it works is because it's loose and because we have a chance to make up our own minds about things. Nobody tells us how we have to do it. Now, sobriety for me has been a lifelong process of learning to live not just without a drink, but learning to live soberly, that is, sanely. That's what it means to me. It can mean other things to other people. Anybody else? Yes.
My dad got sober in AA, and he has 11 years of sobriety, and I have a respect for AA that I just couldn't seem to find for the other 12-step fellowship. But Daddy has a concept, I think, that's all over the place, and it's the addictive personality. And I think I guess my question is, do you believe in the addictive personality, or by closing the meetings to people that only have a drug problem, don't you think that they can be helped by the AA meeting? I mean, I understand that you're protecting
the nature of AA. I wouldn't want to see that run, but by closing the meeting, it seems to me that drug addicts, or because my sponsor happened to walk into a meeting one time and I confessed it, and it was a closed meeting, considered himself a sponsor, only a drug addict, and she was actually leave. Well, the question is, if you close a meeting to people with other problems, aren't you closing the door to a kind of help that might be useful to all kinds of people who have an addictive personality and an addiction of one kind or another? I think we have to make the point repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly is that we cannot be all things to all people. We can do one thing and we can do it well, and we really have to stick to our last. We have to stick to doing what we know how to do. My own opinion is that one single drug addict sitting in an AA meeting should never be asked to leave. That's my opinion. I don't believe in asking anybody to leave, ever, unless they are disrupting the meeting and making it impossible for the message to be carried. If they are not interfering with carrying the message, why do we have to be hurtful to people? I don't see that. It is possible after the meeting is over for them to be told that closed meetings are for alcoholics only. And then what we used to do in my group, if we knew people who had a drug problem as well, we would suggest that they talk to that person about the drug problem. But I don't really think at the present time that AA is ready to open the doors to everybody with every kind of addiction, because nowadays they call everything an addiction. Everything is an addiction. I mean, if you care too much about your husband, you're addicted to him. I mean, I read something like this, really.
Don't you think that's what happened to the Washington? You know, they entered into all this controversy, you know, the slavery issue and all that stuff.
We're going to get to that when we get to the 10th tradition. We're going to get to the Washingtonians. And they got involved in so many things, they collapsed. Yes. Yes, Kim. Well, I mean, she says if she doesn't follow this literally, she gets screwed up. Well, if you're an alcoholic, you don't have a problem. You remember. That's in this book right here. That's a quote from Bill.
You know, and if we really believe what it says, we're desperate.
Mm-hmm.
We turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. The principle that was expressed here was, who are we to say, who can be here and who can't?
Well, we do say that the name of our fellowship is Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, we're going to change the name of the fellowship? I mean, I do not think AA at this time is ready to open the doors to everybody with every addiction. This is not to say that we have to be hurtful to people. But there are fellowships for people to go to besides AA. And time and effort can make those other fellowships work. And in some places, Narcotics Anonymous does work well. And certainly, Al-Anon works well, which is another fellowship outside of AA. Overeaters Anonymous works well. There are a number of them that do. There have been as many as 400 fellowships at a given time who were modeling themselves more or less after AA. But when people ask us why we are effective when other things are not, there's one answer, and it is that we have but a single purpose, which is to carry the message to alcoholics who still suffer. That's what we know how to do. Yes?
I'm Mark. I'm a problem with that tradition, and my problem arose out of the fact that I looked at it as a personal attack on me for ever using drugs. And it wasn't that. These traditions, as I understand them, this is my statement, it's a way for AA as a whole to govern AA as a whole. Or as groups, you break it down into groups. It has a lot to do with my sobriety, but then again, it's not a personal attack on me. I use drugs alcoholically. I drank alcohol.
So you were an alcoholic.
Right. I've had no problem saying I'm an alcoholic or an addict. You know, I could say I'm an alcoholic or addict. I drive too fast. I drive alcoholically. You know, I do all this stuff alcoholically. Therefore, I am an alcoholic. When I don't look at it as a personal attack on my character or take it personally, then I don't have a problem.
90% of the people coming into AA, and I shouldn't use a figure, because that's in New York. Approximately 90% of the people who came to the New York Intergroup office last year had a dual addiction. They were addicted to both alcohol and drugs. They are welcome at AA. They are alcoholics. It's not a criticism of anybody. Nothing is. Drug addiction, pure and simple by itself, without alcohol, like a lot of other kinds of addictions, occur in a different kind of environment from what alcohol occurs in. This is less true now than it was a few years ago, but for instance, in New York, I could not go to work without passing 6 bars on the way to the subway, let alone any number of liquor stores. You couldn't get away from it. You can't go to a family wedding, a family christening, a family celebration without alcohol being involved. As in my experience, they are not yet passing around trays with needles. Some places they may be passing around nose candy and marijuana, but most places, most family parties, they don't do that yet. In other words, it's a different kind of thing. We spend almost no time at AA meetings talking about the drug we took. we talk about what we do to stay away from the drug. So we don't talk about the drug itself. We talk about how to stay sober, how to stay away from it. Somebody in the back had his hand up. Yes. Hi, Chris.
Love you, Chris.
And there seems to be some, each year we have our yearly showdown between most of the young people there and some of the old timers there that have been in AA for a long time. And it usually pertains to a member of our group that does not have a problem with alcohol, but that does have a problem with drugs. Now, this member of our group has participated and contributed more of her time and her efforts and her finances, so to speak, in AA meetings than some of our, as you say, members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And each year, she tries to come up and get a year medallion. Literature anywhere in AA that talks about giving out your medallions or anything like that, to my knowledge. But if they want to reject her being able to get a year medallion, she says that she has a desire to stay sober. Now, she says it's not alcoholic, she's never drank it. There's a 6-month anniversary in a meeting whether or not she can receive an anniversary medallion.
Do you want me to repeat this for the mic? There is a person who attends this group who says that she's not an alcoholic. She is a drug addict, but she does have a desire to stay sober even though she's never had a drink. So it's not a problem for her as far as we know. But she participates in the group. She's active. She contributes her time and her efforts and her money. And she would like to be able to receive a year's medallion. And the group doesn't want to give it to her, and he would like our comments. And my comment has to be, I can't comment on this. I've said what the literature tells us. Membership in AA is for alcoholics or alcoholics with other problems. Alcoholics with 2 problems, 10 problems, 50 problems, but alcoholics.
But even though it would be an open meeting.
She can attend open meetings, but that doesn't mean she receives a medallion. Now, medallions are something the groups took up. We don't even sell them at the AA General Service Office. I never heard of a medallion until I moved to the South. We never got them in New York at any group I ever heard of. But they're used down here. Now, I don't think there's anything more that can be said about that. The literature is very clear on it.